From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, MBW Digital proudly presents the Oxford Exxon Podcast.
I'd say thanks for tuning in, but why am I going to give you a round of applause for something you're supposed to do, to be frank?
And now, here are your hosts, Chase Palm.
And broadcast school has really paid off.
And Neil McCready.
I deserve to be on TV.
Welcome to the Oxford Exxon Podcast on this Wednesday morning. Chase Parham, Neil McCready, Clark Ford Studio. Today on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline, we're talking Anthony Dasher, UGASports.com, part of the Rivals.com family, owned by Yahoo or Verizon or someone.
Someone owns us.
Not really sure who, but anyway, we're here. Dash will be here as well. He is in Destin for the SEC meetings. Hugh Freeze at the podium yesterday. You can see that entire interview on the site at rebelgrove.com, courtesy of Barrett Salee. He is there. I guess Barrett still is doing radio for the most part
he
right
is.
Now.
Yeah.
So you can check that out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about some different SEC meeting things with Anthony and just on the podcast today in general. Have more baseball on the site at rebelgrove.com later today. I'm talking to Mike Bianco this morning. So whatever from that, I will have up quick hits and then some stories as the week progresses as well. Good podcast coming to you later in the week, but let me get that done before we go there just to make sure there are no kinks or anything. But anyway, podcast, as always, brought to you by the Oxford Exxon and the Oxford Crystal Credit Oil Company up and down I-55 and throughout North Mississippi as well. And they are the presenting sponsors of the YGB, You Gotta Believe Football Camp. YGBfootball.com is where you can go there to check out more. Quincy Adebojo, Dante Moncrief, Cody Core, Evan Ingram participating in that. That's at Jackson Academy, July 6th and 7th. So, again, check them out online to be a part of that or to help them out. Also, PlentyCard, PLENTI.com, as always, to see the different retailers where you can earn points and save money with Cradical and the Oxford Exxon, lunch specials, ribs, and more. And then with the Oxford Crystal specials every single day. You can mix and match with the fried chicken or the country fried steak. Right now in your 5 for 5. And again, coming to you from the Clark Ford studio.
We are Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900, clarkfordinc.com. Call the number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote in 15 minutes. It is indeed that easy. It's no haggling. It's right to the bottom line. And then the ball's in your court. You can take your quote and you can shop it. Shop it wherever you would like. Spend your summer vacation if you want. Shopping for a better deal. Maybe you'll get one. I don't think you will. I think you'll find in the end that Corey and the people at Clark Ford are more than ready to do for you what they've done for so many podcast listeners all over the South, from Missouri to Biloxi, from Texas to Georgia, and that is to take the hassle out of the everyday car buying experience. You'll get right to the bottom line. You'll get your deal. You'll be thrilled with it, and then if you want to get even more thrilled with it, right at the end, right about the time you're finishing up everything with Corey, say, hey, Corey, I heard about the dealership on the podcast. You can mention this podcast. You can mention the Beer Garden, a Beer Garden coming out tomorrow with Jeffrey Wright, then another one with Tony Jones later in the week. So you can mention any of those podcasts, $500 off. The bottom line, Clark Ford and Amory, 662-257-1900.
Jones is an NBA writer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, look at me. Thought that was right. I kind of heard it. And
he
I went,
covers the Utah Jazz. And
oh, yeah. That's right.
And has some pretty hot takes on the whole Jordan LeBron thing.
You've had him on the Beer Garden before. I think we might have even had him on this podcast at some point.
Had
along
him
the
on
way.
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's really good.
Is he? What's really Jeffrey good. Talking about?
I don't know.
Jeffrey thinks.
Jeffrey and I might talk about how we cheer for two baseball teams that right now are really bad.
Mediocre.
Below 500.
Yeah.
The Cubs and the Cardinals last night fell below 500.
So who's winning the division?
I don't know. Milwaukee is in first place, but they're only up by a game.
Well, no, I meant right now who's winning the division.
Milwaukee.
Okay, gotcha.
Who's going to win it? Your guess is as good as mine.
Still just May 31st.
And Cincinnati's right there.
Cozart having a hell of a year.
Zach Cozart. Making things a little complicated for the Reds. The Reds' problem is that they would love to trade Cozart right now. Last year of his deal, he's not getting any younger, having a phenomenal season, just tearing the cover off the baseball. And yet the Reds, truth be told, are probably thrilled with Cozart, and they look up at the standings and go, oh, damn.
Could ship him off.
Because we could get something for him right now. We could get pieces that could help us contend down the road, but our fans will throw a fit if we trade him now because we're in it.
Oh, yeah, you can't do anything right now but win.
And so they're worried. They're getting there, sitting there going, okay, Cozart's hot. I mean, this is not I'm not knocking Zach here, but he's had a run of injuries in his career. So they're thinking, dude looks like a difference maker for a contender right now.
Mm-hmm.
But what if he yanks his hamstring in 10 days? What if he breaks a bone in his foot in 10 days? Now we don't get any value for him, and we still lose. Sometimes teams don't want to win. The Minnesota Twins are in this boat. They would love to trade Erwin Santana in first place. They look up at the standings and go, are you serious? We don't want to win yet.
Stop.
Yeah. Weird.
Go lose 8 of 9 for
me. But, man, Zach's tearing it up. He's having a great season. Good for him.
Been around a while now, too.
Well, he's had a hard time in his career staying healthy.
Yeah. When he hits, he's an all-star caliber player because defense has never been a problem.
He's an elite defensive player.
Yeah.
He's been a good hitter. He just can't get healthy. And
playing in a great park for it.
Hitting is a rhythm thing.
Yeah.
So when you get injured and you come back and you have to get your rhythm back and stuff, and you're doing that, getting your rhythm back at the major league level is problematic because the people that are throwing the ball 60 feet away are pretty talented.
It'll probably be over by the time you hear this on the podcast, but a Gray Kessinger's Jones fracture surgery is this morning in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think it was scheduled for 9 a.m. I have no idea if that's Eastern or Central because I was told by someone in the Central time zone. However, that's clearly on the East Coast. So,
are you going to live blog it?
Live blog his surgery?
Yeah. No.
I mean, get a cam in there. I guess we could, you know.
It would be an interesting surgery to watch.
It would. The standard procedure for this is to fix it, put a pin in it. It's in a metatarsal of the foot. And then, I guess that's being a little redundant, but anyway.
It's okay.
Yeah.
You're just a sports writer.
Yeah, I'm not a medical professional.
You're not a smart person like a college football coach or something. Yeah. Because those are the smart people.
Yeah. I've learned a lot about metatarsals and shoulder caps over the last 10 to 12 years. You know, Biddle had the shoulder cap issue on and on and on.
He did.
Still day to day. And, I'm being a jerk. I'm sorry. But anyway, metatarsal, shoulder caps, those kind of things. But anyway, they take marrow out of your hip and put it in your foot to try to make it heal faster. It's really incredible. I mean, it's fascinating. Again, Robert Anderson's doing that surgery. He is the, as I was quoted, or someone I quoted someone, the James Andrew of the foot.
Yes.
He's the Panthers team doctor, but he's done Derek Jeter, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Cam Newton, obviously.
You mispronounced he who shall not be named.
He who shall not be named.
Thank you.
Go Cavs.
Cavs Nation, baby. We are all Cavs.
It's like it's such the contrarian, like on Twitter, like Dylan cheering for the Cavs and the Penguins.
Yeah.
Right now. Just.
Well, I am for the
every
Predators.
Time the Predators would do something bad, he'd put Penguins out on Twitter.
I think people get sick of bandwagons.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is. Carson hates bandwagons. He tells me that all the time. Man, that guy's a bandwagon.
So he's not pulling for the Warriors tonight.
Is it tonight?
Oh, is it not tonight?
I think
when
it's tomorrow
it?
Night.
Oh, okay.
Isn't it?
Anyway.
Tonight's okay. Game 2, Stanley Cup.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
No, that's all. Just, no, he's for the Cavs.
He's for the Cavs?
Big time.
Do you have any jerseys on this, or are we just going to?
If the Cavs win, I'm buying a LeBron James sleeved jersey.
That's right. Black, red, white, gray? What are we doing?
Whatever one I can find.
Okay.
Probably the black one. I'll wear it every day for a week. It'll be a week of my choosing, but I will wear it every day for a week, and I will photograph and document.
Wherever you are, at Kroger or?
Wherever I am. But if LeBron will do this, but I am hopping on the Cavalier bandwagon.
And then hopping off.
And then hopping off.
Somebody can get their seat back later.
Absolutely. Free of charge.
Did you see where your boy Jake Arrieta thought the brawl was awesome between Strickland and Harper?
Funny.
By the way, 6 games for Strickland, 1 start. No, MLB bringing the pain.
They are, aren't they?
Harper with 4 games. It's good.
You should be suspended more than that for the bad.
I did love DeLucci throw. And a couple other former major league guys on Twitter yesterday commenting about how you don't throw the helmet from the brim or the bill. You throw it from the ear flap.
Yeah, because
that's
no
the way
grip
to get the
it.
Maximum velocity. Yeah. Is to throw it from the ear flap. He said, "You have no idea how many helmets I've gone back into the clubhouse and thrown against the wall over the years. So you have to do it." He goes, "Style points for the bill, but for efficiency, it's the ear flap."
Yeah, because it just slipped right out of his hands.
So, reading here, appearing on 670 The Score in Chicago. Players do that a lot, do the radio stuff in
Yeah,
Chicago.
They all have, like, contractual deals and stuff.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Okay. Quote, "I don't think anybody's right or wrong. Thought it was awesome. Every once in a while, it's refreshing to see two teams emotionally charged getting after it. And when something like that happens versus continuing to chirp and talk about it, why don't you go out there and see somebody? That's exactly what happened in the game yesterday." Hard to disagree with that too much. Quit the hold me back stuff. If we're gonna do it, let's do it.
Oh yeah. What I love was Buster Posey saying, "I'm out of this."
He had no interest in defending his dude whatsoever, did he?
Defending him for what? You're gonna hold a grudge for 3 years and then plunk Bryce Harper in the hip? And Harper goes running and he's like,
"So you Posey defending Bryce Harper?"
A little bit, because he said it was stupid.
He didn't call for it.
No.
He didn't drop the
You can look at Posey back there going, "Oh my God, you're going to do this, aren't you?" Posey's going, "I'm not risking my career for this."
How great was that a couple weeks ago? Who got plunked, and then was it Deadspin or what media outlet goes, "Oh, the catcher called for it because the catcher put a finger down and yeah. pointed it inside"? It's like, yes, so they must be trying to plunk 47 people a game, clearly, is how that yeah. works, because that is an inside fastball.
That was when the Braves retaliated against Bautista.
That's right.
To Bautista's credit that night, he knew it was coming, knew it was deserved, okay. took it, and went to first base.
Okay, fair enough. Let's all move on.
And then Teheran, who hit him, was completely out of – was it Julio Teheran hit him? I can't remember. Whoever hit him was completely out of kilter at that point, because he had spent his warm-up apparently focused on hitting Bautista, and then the first inning went to hell, and they got blown out. Baseball, the unwritten rules of baseball are really difficult to keep up with sometimes.
I actually had an experience like that in high school where they told me to hit somebody, and it actually does get you a little freaked out because you're worried about, what if I miss them? What if I don't hit them?
Oh, yeah, it's a big deal. I literally think
What if it slips and I throw it at his head instead of his hip?
Well, because whoever the Braves pitcher was that day, and I think it was Teheran. If it wasn't, I apologize to Braves Nation. I think he missed him the first time he threw it at him and then came back the second time and got him.
You only get one shot. You miss, it's on you.
Oh, yeah. So the second time, see, you issued the warning after the miss. Like, okay, you had your chance.
Yeah. Not my fault. You missed
That's
him.
Where an umpire goes, "I don't want to do this all night."
Stop.
Yeah, can we just play a baseball game here and get done?
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. What you watched a good bit. What stuck out yesterday? Meetings, Destin.
A lot of whining.
From all the coaches?
A lot of whining. I'll give Hugh Freeze some credit.
Okay.
A couple of weeks after he bombed the golf thing, and there's no spinning that, he was awful. That was an awful look for him that day in the golf at the golf course at Greystone.
Yep.
He knew there was going to be interviews there. He knew there would be media there. I've heard some spin about, well, here's what happened. Yeah, but when the camera's in front of your face, you can't act like that, making $4.8 million a year, when the question's fair.
Yeah.
Yesterday, obviously, he knew those questions would come, and I thought he handled them pretty well.
Seemed relaxed. Seemed loose yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, not really dissecting answers, just body language. He appeared fine yesterday.
Yeah, people keep asking, what do you think it means? I don't think it means anything necessarily. It might mean a lot. It might mean nothing. Look, Ole Miss has been confident throughout this whole thing. That's been their MO, if you will, their attitude du jour has been confidence. There's a lot of revisionist history happening right now. But I can remember people saying there won't be a bowl ban. Well, there is a bowl ban. I can remember people saying there won't be that many scholarships lost. Here's the one thing I'm not going to do. In the event that the scholarship loss is 20+, I'm not going to be, well, you know, it's a manageable number. No, it's not. 22 scholarships is both sides of the ball. That's devastating. Does it mean you can't overcome it? No. But you're playing in a league with Alabama, Auburn, LSU, multiple programs who routinely recruit top 10 classes.
It was in the NOA the first time, or the response the first time, or whatever. I've read so many documents by this point, and I'm just having a bit of a mental lapse here. That's how it affects the 25. How does it affect the 85? I can't remember what their total number is for the 85.
Yeah, I mean, they reduce it down.
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
I mean, obviously, you're not at 63, but they do reduce it down to some point.
I mean, people say, well, you know, I've seen teams win. I mean, Hugh Freeze's first team won with, I don't know, 58 scholarships or something. I get that. I do. But if the goal of the program is to be a championship-level program, being down 20-some-odd scholarships over 3 years is not the way to go. So when people say, well, that's not that big of a deal, yes, it is. It is a big deal. Doesn't mean you can't overcome it, but it is a big deal. Anyway, I thought Freeze did well yesterday. Dash and I talk about this. You'll hear it in a little bit. There was a whole lot of the whole, I don't know where this change in the signing period came from. And I was like, we've been hearing about this for 4 years. Been asking about an early signing period for literally years, and coaches act like it's a new thing.
The biggest issue I have with it is it's going to put coaches in a very, very, very tough spot from an academic standpoint.
Yes.
Because you've got kids pressing you to commit, and you have to manage that fine line of looking at this kid and going, look, your grades are crap. I don't know, because I think you might be in JUCO in a year, and I don't know. Eh. But this is the way this works. You know, it's like the first year that they allowed the kids to sign the financial aid agreements in August. And was it C.J. Hampton? That you know, multiple schools were involved with these things because CJ just went to every campus and went, hey, let me sign. And you know, like Arkansas is going, well, you're not coming here. And when you do that, if I talk to you after this and then you don't come here, it's a violation. Like what happened with Matt Womack when he switched from LSU to Alabama and LSU got in trouble over it. What do you do? You know, so there's going to be a lot of that trying to manage how that works, what happens. Now, look, the whole, well, nobody's in class, that makes no difference whatsoever. That's a talking point. But the academic thing, I will I'll go with them on that. Look, it's not affecting your bowl prep, as Orgeron tried to claim yesterday. It's doing none of that crap in from December the 20th to December the 22nd.
Come on. Some of the whining is ridiculous. The whole thing about their academics is true. But my point is we've known this was coming forever.
What's your take on Saban yesterday, a guy that would benefit and said this from the free agency and transfers more than anybody else because they're the top program. If they fall off, somebody else will benefit the most.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like it because he thinks that it is just creating a chaotic environment in the conference.
Sometimes I don't think he gets enough credit in these environments for having really intelligent answers. He always talks.
Or at least real answers.
Real answers.
Yeah.
But he was right. He nailed that answer. He's exactly right. There's no program in the SEC that would benefit more from free agency than Alabama.
Of course.
A kid with a kid goes, let's take a take Greg Little for fun. Just for fun. Goes to Ole Miss, graduates in 3 years, looks up and goes, you know what? I need to refine myself a little bit. They're putting six first-rounders in the draft every year. I'm going to go there. One of the best tackles in the league. And I can assure you the kids around the league look at Alabama and go, man, they're putting guys in the league. That's what other kids in the conference.
I mean, Ole Miss got Greg Little because Laramie Tunzel played his position and is in the
exactly
league.
Exactly why. And so that's what – Saban's right. There would be kids who would go. It would happen every year. They would be able to fill a hole with an elite player. Bang.
Yeah, let's say Boone Williams at Kentucky was a tick better than he is. And Alabama goes, hey, you can play tailback here.
Yeah.
Buy Wildcats.
Yeah.
Peace.
I have my degree.
Yeah. I'm going to go over here and run behind that line for 12 games.
And improve my NFL stock. nothing stopping it. And I think Saban's right. He says we would be the ones that would benefit from it, and I don't like it. I don't like the idea of free agency in the league. And now the early signing period, this is where this dovetails. The early signing period makes it where more kids are going to enroll in January of their senior high school year, and they're going to knock out 12, 15 hours. Kids take intersessions now. Kids take summer school loads.
Oh, tons of hours.
It is so easy.
Well, it's like Hugh Freeze said yesterday during his thing. He says, you know, basically everybody was gone for a couple weeks in May, but then you've got Maymester, the intercession, and then everybody's in for the first session. I mean, is it Javonte Payton that didn't qualify? But
yeah.
For the most part, everybody else is in and done. I mean, it's here.
So you can get out in 3 years if you'll stay on it. I'm not saying it's easy to get out, but it's very doable.
Yeah, no doubt.
Because you get a free semester. And so if those guys are getting out, they have their degree. If they can transfer anywhere with no penalty, it turns the league into free agency of all stars.
Yeah. Podcast brought to you in part, Community Mortgage, located in Oxford, Memphis, Soto County, Chattanooga, 30 years old this year. When the Ogles Mortgage Companies in the Southeast, all underwriting and processing is done in Memphis. So you're getting local underwriting and understands your market. Also the leader in condo financing in Oxford. Ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float-down option, which allows you to lock in the current rate. But if rates go down before you close, you get the lower rate. Contact Jason, 662-234-2704 or at jlowe, L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com.
Podcast also brought to you by Harry Alexander. He's an Oxford-based RE/MAX Legacy Realty agent. Harry's been in Oxford more than four decades. No one knows the residential and condo market in Oxford better than Harry. Go to his site, harryalexander.com. Click on the Properties and Neighborhoods tab. You can see an updated listing of what is available. And then send him an email, ha at harryalexander.com. He'll take care of the rest. Podcast also brought to you by Grenada Nissan. If you're in the market for a Nissan vehicle, Grenada Nissan is the place to go. It is located just off Interstate 55 in Grenada. Complete selection of new and previously owned Nissan vehicles. Also great lease deals, great service after the sale. Gene and Sandy have been great friends of this site and this podcast for a long time. Tell them you heard about it here. You'll get Rebel savings on top of the already great deals at Grenada Nissan. It's GrenadaNissanUSA.com. The podcast also brought to you by John Fryer and Tuna Chasa Charters in Biloxi. John handles inshore and offshore fishing expeditions, knows where to put you on the fish you want to catch. Give him a call, 228-348-7817. Visit his Facebook page. Whether you're looking for a quick fishing trip inshore, a serious deep sea fishing excursion, or anything in between, John and the folks at Tuna Chasa Charters can take care of you. Some great news for you. If you're headed down to the coast for vacation, snapper season has been extended 70 days for any in-state water. So if that's on your agenda, give them a call. Again, the number 228-348-7817. And as we talk about football, get close, month of June starts tomorrow. It will be August and September before you know it. You want to get your tailgating plans ironed out. Go to 7 South Tailgating. 7 South Tailgating is owned and operated by husband and wife duo Kyle and Jordan Thornton, both of whom are Ole Miss alumni and avid fans. 7 South is equipped with the largest staff in the Grove. It can service most any of your tailgating needs. They offer SEC-only and full-season packages. Complete rental packages available. Our fans can provide all of their own gear, and 7 South will set it up for them. 7 South offers complete setup, game day concierge, post-game trash removal, equipment breakdown, and year-round storage. They'll set up in the Grove, the Circle, or on the outskirts of campus. It's the largest vendor in the Grove, yet they still manage to know each customer personally by name. They typically sell out every game, so visit the site today. Secure your spot. If you give 7 South a try for one season, you'll never tailgate without them again. The site is 7southtailgating.com. You can reach them by cell 662-321-1682.
Let's continue some SEC talk with Anthony Dasher of UGASports.com. Again, he's in Destin, and he's now on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline.
All right, Dash, appreciate you joining us. Disclosure, it is Tuesday night. You'll be hearing this on Wednesday morning. You're at SEC Spring Meetings there in Destin, which you and I were just talking before we came on. I haven't covered that in a while, and I keep telling myself I should go to it because you get a level of access there that, frankly, is it's kind of rare these days.
It really is. I guess the thing, you know, it's the thing I've been to this thing, you know, several times myself, and I guess that for me, the biggest thing I get is it's not that big giant scrum that you've got at Hoover for media day. There's probably only, and I'm guessing now, maybe 40, maybe 50 reporters that are here, as opposed to what 1,200 or so that show up for, you know, the thing in Hoover, you know, next month. So you get a little better access. You know, it's a lot more laid back, you know, the media day. I think the coaches, to an extent, are more, you know, relaxed and are able to, you know, I won't say open up, but maybe say some things in a manner of at this event that they want in Hoover.
I know you go because it's hard to get any type of quality time with Kirby Smart. Just how restricted is he when it comes to media? I mean, is he paranoid? Is it just part of the deal? Is this what he learned from Saban? Because it's funny, I was watching, I guess it was Barrett Salee put up all the interviews with all the different coaches, and I was watching Saban today. And for all of the Nick Saban is guarded and closed off and that kind of thing, he's more media savvy than he gets credit for. And when I watch,
oh, sure he is.
And when I watch Smart, I don't sense that, at least to this point, and he's still very early in his career as a head coach, I don't sense that he is anywhere close to as media savvy as his former boss is.
That's a very good assessment. I will say something that's kind of funny from today. You know, as usual, this thing kind of got behind a little bit, and Coach Smart only spent like 5 minutes in front of the big room, is what I like to call it, there with the other reporters. But, you know, afterwards, he stepped outside and spoke with myself and some of the other beat writers and a couple of the national guys who popped in and clocked out in the SID. Was kind of trying to hurry things along after about 8 minutes. And Coach said, hold on, I got to get some time to my boys. My boy talking about the beat riders, which we all kind of looked at as like, your boy's right. Yeah, we know that goes. But, you know, I think it was more or less of an olive branch because it hasn't been a kind of contentious relationship between the Georgia beat riders and Coach Martin, again, because of some of the access issues, you know, that the media, you know, sees at UGA. And maybe this is a way for him to kind of, you know, lighten the friction, I guess, you know, if you will. But it has been very, very difficult at Georgia. I mean, again, they used to have, you know, Bulldog Club meetings across the state, and the media was welcome to go. And, you know, they used to talk to Coach Martin, Coach Fox, basketball coach, maybe 10 minutes, get a little something. But now all that's been closed up and doing it entirely different this year. They actually going out of state for these business tournaments, a big booster money-making shindig. The media has not been invited at all. So, kind of, as we talked earlier, the biggest reason I came to Destin was just getting up there and talk with Coach Smart, because, I mean, opportunities we're getting are few and far between, and I can go on and on about the player access. It's just been completely shut off. It has been, for a season and a half, you know, year and a half, he's been at Georgia. Just made our job a lot more difficult. I know, fans, that doesn't mean anything at all, but
you know what, though?
You know, folks were trying to do their job, make it hard.
You know what? It doesn't, quote, mean anything to fans, except here's the thing. And Brandon Marcello doesn't like me. We had a little issue at the Auburn-Ole Miss game. I'm really not sure why, because frankly, when Auburn was playing Ole Miss, I was watching Game 4 of the World Series on my computer. And
sure.
You know, so he's blocked me on Twitter, so I couldn't follow the whole thing, but people have read it to me. He kind of went on some people call it a rant. I didn't really – what was read to me, I didn't think it was a rant. I thought it was more of almost an essay on his part, talking about how fans say it doesn't matter to them. You know, I don't care about media access and stuff, except you as fans want to get to know the people that you're cheering for. You want to get to know the people, underlined, italicized, that you're cheering for, not necessarily the little robots that are wearing the white jerseys or the red jerseys or the black jerseys or the orange jerseys or whatever jersey that they might be wearing. You want to get to know the people, and when the access is eliminated the way that it is, we don't get to tell those stories. And so unless you are somehow knowledgeable of a person, of an individual story, you'll spend 4 years cheering for a guy at Georgia or Ole Miss or Tennessee or Florida or Colorado or wherever, and you don't know who the hell you're cheering for.
No, that's exactly right. And when that's an argument, we've actually basically fought in person. You know, when we had a little private session to beat writer Ted and Coach Martin back in spring practice, kind of talk about some of the, you know, issues, you know, practice issues and things of this nature. And, yeah, I mean, there's so many great stories out there, not just at Georgia, but I'm sure at Ole Miss and Alabama, wherever, whatever school you want to talk. But those are because of the lack of access and only, and like in Georgia's case, we're really popular, you only get like about 10 or 12 core guys throughout the year. A lot of stories just go untold, and I think that's sad because I think now these kids work hard. They're out there busting their rear ends every day to be part of the football program, and a lot of them, like I said, have good, great stories to tell. And I think Angela's fine. Quite interesting, as opposed to, you know, some of the stuff that gets printed, you know, from time to time. But because they're so strict and so, you know, they want to have to be, the coaches want to be such control freaks, you know, so much. I think a lot of fans, and you know, everybody's missing out on that kind of stuff.
All right, let's talk about some of the stuff that came up today, issue wise.
Sure.
A lot of talk. I'm gonna be honest. I find this to be disingenuous on the part of the coaches. A lot of the talk.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, I heard a bunch of them. I'm not singling one coach out or three coaches out. I mean, this is like seven coaches. People talking about, hey, you know, I don't know why we went this far with the early signing period.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. I mean, Dash, we've been talking about early signing period for 3 years. And yes. So it finally happens, and now the coaches go to Destin and they bitch about it, and I'm not picking on Nick Saban here, but when Nick Saban says, "Hey, I like the recruiting calendar the way it used to be," my response is, "Well, of course you do. I mean, you recruit better than anyone in the country." Now I'm going to side with Saban on something in a minute, so I'm picking on him here. I'm going to side with him in a minute. Hugh Freeze, others said, you know, I liked it the way it was. I heard a lot of coaches lobbying for an early signing period, and now they have it and they're bitching about it. What did you take from that today with all the different people talking about it? And all of a sudden, you know, the idea of an early signing period is really problematic for coaches.
Yeah, there was a lot of whining, and I'll just be up front about there's a lot of whining about it today, but pretty much from all the coaches they would sit in and listen to. And I know from one thing that Kirby Smart pointed out, you know, maybe to an extent he's got a point, I don't know, that teaches on this. But as far as the high school kids themselves, that weekend, you know, a few days in December, a lot of, you know, teams, you know, competing for state championships are playing during that time. And that kind of makes it difficult on the kids who maybe for whatever reason want to, you know, commit, sign, whatnot, and focus on playing the state title game. So they made a big, Kirk made a big deal about that. Greg Sankey even mentioned that during his little talk with the media today. So that was a big thing on Kirby Smart's part. But, you know, anyway, the coaches were asking me, how many kids do you think are actually going to, you know, sign during this early time? And I think Brett Bielema said maybe between 70 and 90 from his perspective, but other coaches that think it would matter, you know, maybe sign one or two. So you get a lot of different answers, a lot of different opinions on this thing, but an awful lot of whining. There's no question about that.
The other topic that came up a lot today was that about transferring inside the league, grad transfers, transferring inside the league. And now here's where I thought Nick Saban spoke a lot of truth today. I really did. I got to give him credit because he made a comment that it got overlooked by a lot of people, but he was right. He said basically Alabama would be a school that would benefit greatly from a competitive standpoint if they had that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of kids would a lot of kids at that point in their careers would look at Alabama and say, "Hey, man, they know how to put people in the league. I've got my degree. Now I can get into the league." And he said he's against it. And I sensed a little frustration on his part about Mo Smith and the situation at Georgia. And some people said, hey, Kirby Smart and Nick Saban might not be as tight as they once were. What was your thoughts about the whole grad transfer thing? And then what is the relationship between Saban and Smart right now?
Well, Nick and Kirby, in my opinion, are definitely on the opposite of the fence as far as the grad transfer rule goes. And although, you know, you'll never get one of the two to say anything on the record, you kind of get the sense that there's a little bit of friction between the two. I think a lot because of what happened with Maurice Smith. So, it's going to be interesting to talk, Marcus is being, this is being played on Wednesday. What did the coach decide when they meet today? We should have a final conclusion at some point, you know, later this afternoon. But, they definitely, again, just like the thing with the early signing period there, there's a lot of different opinions on this graduate transfer deal. And Coach Martin, Coach Lamer are definitely off the side to come to this.
What do you think of it? I'm for it. I'll be honest. Yeah, I'm for player rights.
I'm for it too. I am too. I mean, coaching can leave anytime they want to. I mean, I think I've even mentioned this on our message board. I mean, I don't blame the, I don't fault kids or think bad about them for a second. Coaches could leave. Players should be able to do it well.
I'm totally with you. I was in a different boat a few years ago about something like that. Probably if it had come up.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I think, you know what, if a player completes his degree requirement, that means he was there 3 years. And if at the end of 3 years he wants out, go.
Yeah, and plus I don't think it's going to be as rampant a thing as maybe some people think it may could wind up being. I mean, if you're that good, you're just going to, you know, go ahead and go pro. So I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference. Maybe some people are afraid of life.
Let's talk about the team you cover for a minute. I know sure. Kirby Smart, 8-5 last year. He said, hey, that's not acceptable. That's not good enough at Georgia. I was with some Georgia people over the weekend, and I was surprised. I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but they were kind of, I tried to avoid the topic of college football whenever possible, but it popped up and I engaged for about 5 minutes. And they were frustrated with Kirby Smart on a number of reasons, and one of them was they said, and when I kept asking them, like, why are you upset with him? He's recruiting really well. He's bringing in good players, et cetera. And it was, well, you know, Mark Richt did pretty well at Miami, and I thought, really? That's what you're hung up about? How much is the fact that Richt appears to not only be coaching pretty well, but recruiting well at Miami, how much does that put pressure, for lack of a better word, on Smart?
You know, I don't know if it really does or not. It's my opinion. At least I haven't heard that mentioned from folks around message board and brought it up in that way. I think, you know, sure, there are some fans out there who still, you know, don't think Georgia should have gotten rid of Coach Richt and are still very loyal to him. But, you know, it's not a thing, though, where people that have been looking at what Miami has done and say, well, Coach Mark better do this or that. I think pressure on Coach Mark just goes to the fact, again, that he was brought in Georgia to take the team to the next level. And a lot of people thought in his first year there was going to be some kind of magic, spun, and they were going to, you know, accomplish all their goals in year one. Obviously, that didn't happen in Georgia. You know, Georgia showed that they've got still a little bit of ways to go, and they think this is a team this year that can take the next step. How far they'll go, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, again, like I said, Coach Martin has been brought in to take the program to a place that hasn't been in a long time, and that's how he's approaching things as a head coach.
Is it failure at Georgia if they don't go to the SEC championship this year?
Ooh. I know a lot of fans would tell you that that should happen. I mean, just based on what they've got coming back, you know, they got the entire defense coming back. You know, sans, Maurice Smith at star. So you talk about a team that's bringing a lot of talent back, and if Jacob Eason can take the next step as a quarterback, then yeah, I think they've got a good shot with what all they got coming back offensively. But that's something I'm sure we discuss a lot more as the season goes on.
What did you think about the Texas A&M athletic director saying Kevin Sumlin has to win, and he has to win now?
Yeah, well, I saw that right before I came on the telephone here with you. That was a little odd. I can't recall that time I saw an administrator say that about his head coach. I wish I'd kind of been in there when Coach Sumlin came out of the meeting today. I'm sure that was broached with him at that time. You know what he had to say, but that was a. That was a surprise. That's talking about a pressure being put on you. That's about as much as you can possibly do if you're an AD.
Yeah, I mean, that is how you set up your season to be a disaster. I mean, if it doesn't go well out of the gate, and then, you know, when
first loss, man, that's what they're talking about. If they lose their first game, people go, oh, he's out the door. I mean, just because of that comment. So, yeah, that's a ton of pressure to be putting on Kevin Sumlin's shoulders. That's for dang sure.
Scale of 1 to 10, how good is that job in your eyes? I mean, you're kind of like us. We see A&M every year covering Ole Miss. You don't see them every year at Georgia. When you look at that job from the outside, give it a 1 to 10. What is that job?
7.
Yeah.
Just from my perspective. Again, like you said, I mean, we don't see Texas A&M. You know, I think I maybe watched 2 other games last year. One was against Alabama and one might have been the LSU game. I watched part of that contest. But, yeah, I mean, just because, I mean, as a guy who covers Georgia, I know a lot of people who cover teams from the East. I mean, it's, they know about Alabama and your Auburn, your LSU teams who have been in the league for as long as they have. But A&M is, I think, still in some people's eyes, like, is an outsider, just kind of like Missouri, as I would assume for folks in the West. So, it's a great job, no question. But I'm not sure if I put it on the level of the other teams in the league, especially your usual power in the West Division.
You weren't in the room when Hugh Freeze spoke, is that right?
I was there just briefly. I wasn't there long enough to hear what he had to say. I had to go back and grab my laptop first, and I had to write for Kirby real quick.
Yeah, I know. I would suspect you've kind of heard from some people about maybe Jay Tate covers Auburn, as you know, for Rivals.com. He made the comment that Freeze kind of came across as a guy who was, you know, essentially felt like he wasn't the one that did anything. It was other people that did anything. What's the buzz in Destin this week so far about Ole Miss and about the NCAA case?
Yeah, that's obviously something that's been, I can't kind of hanging over, you know, the meeting just a little bit. But, from what I've heard, again, I wasn't there for all of Coach Freeze's talk today, but he's to be, I think, still very, I don't know if defensive is the right word, but just in his mind, he's doing everything, going about things the right way, and whatever happens is going to happen. But he doesn't, I don't get the impression that he is, I don't know, maybe thinks it's as serious as it is. I don't know if that's the right thing to me to say either, but it hasn't made it as a kind of a deal about it that maybe I think a lot of reporters are saying.
Do you sense that Butch Jones feels like he's on the hot seat?
I think a little bit. I mean, he made a comment today about before you can contend, you've got to learn how to contend. I think that kind of rubs some ball fans the wrong way today from some of the responses I saw on Twitter. So, but yeah, I think he is in the hot seat for maybe just a little bit. I won't say it's obviously not as much as Kevin Sumlin, but I think if they have a down year this year, that's going to get some people talking about his job for sure.
I catch myself really liking Brett Bielema at Arkansas. I always have. I don't know why.
He's great. I mean, he made a comment today. He was asked about Texas and some of the things they're doing with this, all that money they're spending on their locker room. He was asking about the arms, especially the arms race that's going on in the conference right now. And he made the comment of like Arkansas can be sexy to do. Talk about him being able to do things of that nature. And just coming from him, it's just hilarious. I mean, he was joking around with reporters and just having a good old time out there. So, but yeah, he seemed to be a fun guy to cover. I don't know. I mean, some of my colleagues who cover the Hogs may tell me differently, but I know that the encounters I've had with him, I've always enjoyed
him. Everybody loves him. His comment was about, he said Arkansas is the girl that's got to spend a lot of time in the bathroom, but when she comes out, she's a knockout.
Exactly.
It's awesome.
He had several comments like that today. Yeah, he's good for a few sound bites.
All right, real quick, I want to get your thoughts on just kind of a couple of things.
Sure.
Nick Saban's the best coach in the SEC. That's obvious. Who's the? Yeah. You, Anthony Dasher, get a chance. You've got to put a team together for one season.
Uh-huh.
You can have any coach in the SEC, but you can't have Saban. Who do you want?
Oh, my gosh.
You can have any of the other 13. You can't have Saban. You can have any of the other 13 for a season. And then I'm going to follow it up with not only a season, but you get him for 5 years. Who's the guy you want for a season? Who's the guy you want for 5 years?
I'm going to say McElwain because he's won division titles his first 2 years in Florida.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, he hasn't had the most talent in the world there, but he's found ways to win. Grant, I know the SEC's have been down, but I'll probably grab it to a guy who's won titles, and he's done that, so I probably would go with him as far as that goes. As far as a coach for 5 years down the road.
Running your program, and you can't have Saban.
I can't have Nick Saban. People are going to laugh at me for this, but I think Ed Orgeron.
Wow.
I'm going to go off the chain on that one. I think Ed didn't live up to what folks hoped at Ole Miss, but I just something about the guy, like maybe it's that Cajun accent that gets me every time. I don't know, but I think he's a great coach. I mean, I know a lot of people may not, agree with me on that as far as what he's done as a head man, but I like the guy, and I think he's got LSU heading in the right direction, and I think I see him having a lot of success there in 5 years' time.
So you think he wins at LSU? You think he learned his lesson at Ole Miss, at USC, and he wins?
I think he learned his lesson, and I think recruiting is going to help a lot. He's going to recruit better players, I think, at LSU than he did at Ole Miss, and that's going to make up for maybe some of those deficiencies that he had in Oxford. So, I think he's going to do a good job.
There's some talk about Auburn moving to the East. It's obviously pipe dream stuff right now. You're there at Georgia. I'm curious if the Georgia Auburn rivalry got suspended or turned into a every other year kind of thing, would it be a big deal to Georgia people?
Oh yeah, no question. Again, because they played for so long, it was rivalry in the South. But yeah, it would still mean a ton. But that actually great thing because they asked about that today. That's not on the agenda. Something I know that Pat Dye brought up, and I know Gus Malzahn was asking about it today. But I don't think it's going to happen anytime real soon. But yeah, it would. I think it only had the intensity if they were the same division if Auburn would move.
I think Oklahoma's in the SEC within the next 10 years. You agree or disagree?
I agree with that. Obviously, they were talking about that during their last expansion period. It wouldn't stun me a bit to see Oklahoma go in at that. If that would happen, then you, I think, obviously would have to see at that point in time some rearranging of the divisions and somebody else have to come in, I guess, to give the league an equal amount of teams. Maybe somebody like a North Carolina or North Carolina State, for example.
That was my next
Oklahoma,
question.
Yeah, I can definitely see that happen.
If Oklahoma's 15,
I think they want North Carolina to go over.
Yeah, I do too. I think
I can see North Carolina again because of some of the issues I think they're having with that conference right now. They're kind of considered the bad boys a little bit in some respects. It's just as far as football goes, anyway. I can see them kind of making a shift.
You add Oklahoma and North Carolina to this league, and you can redo the TV contracts. That might be what it takes to redo them.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be, and that would be those would be two great teams. Honestly, Oklahoma for football, I think they have a great, very good basketball program too. But North Carolina get a Tar Heel basketball program in this league. I mean, you're all of a sudden, you're some of the issues they've had before the SEC team and making NCAA tournament. That's going to up that thought process. I think for the NCAA selection committee just because the Tar Heels will be in the league.
How long are you in Destin?
I'm here till Thursday morning, so I'm gonna be here all day Wednesday, maybe a little bit on Thursday. Probably not much, though, because I know the coaches all leave after tomorrow. After the meeting tomorrow, but I'll be here till Thursday morning.
What's kind of on? What are you looking for? What's on the agenda for the next couple of days that you'll be following?
Well, getting back to the grad transfer deal, I'm interested in seeing what they ultimately decide tomorrow. I mean, she says, where they talk, they're going to have some kind of conclusion on this as far as what the league wants to do. So that's going to probably be the biggest thing. And of course, there's still going to be some talk, I know, about the early signing period. But otherwise, this has been a pretty tame meeting as far as news talking points go. Other than the, I think, emotion or something like the graduate transfer rule, I've probably been like fourth or fifth on the docket was this year, so I think the lead note for everybody who attended this thing this year.
We didn't talk any basketball at all. I know you talked to Mark Fox a little bit. It's the cliche question, hot seat and stuff. He hasn't quite been able to get Georgia over the hump consistently yet. I think he's one of the better coaches in the league. Do you sense that he feels pressure there? Does he think he's close? Or
I think in the back of his mind, he maybe feels a little bit. I think it's funny, both Georgia fans, at least the ones that I deal with, were very unhappy. He was asked to come back to coach for another year. They want Georgia to make a move now because they think Georgia's plateaued in the Mark Fox. And my argument is, where was Georgia before Mark Fox got here? Georgia's has never been known, except for a few years under Jim Harry, Kentucky Smith, as a team that's can consistently make the NCAA tournament or be a contender for any kind of basketball championship. And Coach Fox has got the team really won 20 straight games for three, 4 years in a row, and that's never been done in Athens. But it's just that win all mentality. People, Georgia fans, they think Georgia should be in the NCAA at least every other year. And they hold up Coach Fox and want to do that. But, they've got Yonte Mayton coming back now for next season, which I think is going to be huge. The only player they lost was J.J. Frazier. But they got everybody else coming back from squad last year, and they should be a very strong team.
It's funny. Ole Miss people kind of the same way. They want they want the team to be an every other year NCAA tournament team, and I get that because it's college basketball such that if you're not in the tournament, it's failure. Yeah. But – anyway, I think the league's going to be better next year. I think a bunch of teams are going to actually be pretty good. I've heard people say it's a five-bid league. I think next year's the first year in a long time, and maybe I'm crazy, but the first year in a long time that I think the league has a chance at seven bids.
Yeah, I do too. The type of players that are coming back, and I think there'll be some very good teams. Get back to George for 1 second. We know the myself and Seth Emerson, a couple of guys, Jason Butt, got to talk to Frank Martin, the South Carolina coach, for a little bit tonight as we were coming out of the meeting room today. And Coach Martin has always been a big fan of Mark Fox and loved J.J. Frazier, what he did. Coach Martin said if he was told he could pick a team he could not schedule next year, of how tough they were, what the problems they caused, he would pick Georgia because he just went on and on about how they play within themselves. They don't get out of character, and how they've always just made it very, very tough for the Gamecocks. So Coach Martin was throwing around a lot of love to Coach Fox, which is, again, when Georgia fans hear this, they get all kind of bent out of shape about that because he's not seeing. They don't think Coach Fox is all that. But you talk, I think, within the league, I think Coach Fox had a lot of respect among his peers. But fans sometimes don't see it the same way as the folks who go to battle with every night.
Yeah, that's the way, it was with Frank Martin. A lot of South Carolina fans were souring on him, and now all of a sudden he's a savior. It's the margin between winning big and being on the hot seat sometimes is super thin.
It is.
Well, hey, enjoy your time in Destin. Really appreciate you spending a half hour with us here on the podcast.
Yeah, sure, Dale.
Love to catch up with you again soon.
Hey, we'll do it, Dale. Stay blessed.
Thanks, Dash.
Our thanks to Dash for joining us on the Rebel Locker Room Hotline, the Rebel Locker Room, West Jackson Avenue in Oxford. It is the place to go to get all of your officially licensed Ole Miss gear, all the colors, all the styles, whatever you're looking for, Ole Miss, they've got it at the Rebel Locker Room. Ole Miss football season tickets still available, OleMissTix.com. That's OleMissTix.com. The podcast also brought to you by Comer Heating and Air. Comer Heating and Air has been serving Oxford and the surrounding area for the past 26 years. Their attention to detail, their customer service, and their work is second to none. Comer is an American standard dealer, but they work on any maker model, residential or commercial. Customers get same-day service, free estimates on new units, and preventative maintenance contracts. Visit their website, comerheatingandair.com, or check out their Facebook page. Mention you heard about them on the podcast. You get $20 off. Contact Eric at 662-934-3846 or Shane at 662-832-8749. School is out. Summer's here, and the Oxford Park Commission is just excited as you are. Their summer program lineup is going to keep you active while making memories you won't forget. Tennis, golf, gymnastics, cheerleading, fencing, and karate are just a few of the many activities youth and adults can participate in. Registration ongoing through today, so go get it done today. More information, you can visit online, oxfordparkcommission.com. Like them on Facebook at Oxford Park Commission. Follow them on Twitter at Oxford Parks Rec or Instagram at Oxford Parks. Live well, play well, have fun.
Podcast also brought to you by Master Cuts Lawn and Landscape Maintenance. Master Cuts, serving Oxford, Tupelo, surrounding areas. No job too large or small for Master Cuts. Some of the services include landscape design, installation, landscape lighting, irrigation, maintenance, and turf installation, and even holiday lighting for the holiday season. So give them a call for a free quote, 662-607-7773, mastercutslawn.com. If you sign an annual contract, mention you heard it on the podcast, first cut will be on them. I know somebody that was taking advantage of that yesterday, so you should, too, check them out there. Thanks to Dash for joining us today. Also, meant to bring this up in the beginning, Ken Cooper passed away last night, former Ole Miss head coach. He was the head coach of Ole Miss from 74 to 77, replacing Vault after when he came back there for 1973. He went 21 and 23 during his tenure, 12 and 14 in the SEC. Had the win over Notre Dame in 1977, and then had a weird year in 75. Obviously, I wasn't around for this. 6-5 overall, but 5-1 in the conference, finishing second place. Really tough non-con then, huh?
Yeah, I was five. I remember watching all of those games on the SEC Network back then. Those were great.
Predated Jefferson Pilot, just barely. We didn't get the Daves in 1975.
No, guessing not. Oh, shoot. I was five, I thought Louisiana Tech football was as big as it got.
That's what you saw.
That's what I saw. It's right down the road.
Who did they play back then?
They were like in the Southland, I guess, maybe. I don't remember being five and watching it, but they played like what is now ULM, and they played McNeese, Texas Arlington.
Southeastern a school then?
Southeastern was a school then. Okay. Southwestern, which is now the University of Louisiana at Lafayette. Arkansas State. Those were the teams that they played.
The Indians.
Yeah, the Indians. There were two sets of Indians. There was Northeast Louisiana
right. And
Arkansas State. So we saw lots of Indians invade.
And now we have Red Wolves and Warhawks.
Yeah, all the Indians went away.
I mean, Warhawk's still basically an Indian, right?
It's a hawk.
Well, I know, but come on. Like
it's a hawk. It's a giant, vicious attacking
hawk. I'm aware.
Hawk.
I've seen them play too many baseball games this season.
Yeah, boy.
Good grief, they were bad.
Well, they were studying.
They actually scared the crap out of them the second game for a little while.
Looking back, it might have been a harbinger of things to come.
Foreshadowing at its finest.
Yeah. Might should have paid a little more attention. That might have been a clue.
fired their coach.
I know. I've applied.
Oh, yes, right.
I haven't heard from them yet.
I mean, you would think alumni trying to get the job.
You'd think that would matter.
Anyway, I don't know. What else is going on? I got the list of athletes here.
Got the list. Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to find what's interesting on it. Rory McIlroy's ahead of Spieth. That's not surprising.
Nah, Rory's more interesting than Spieth.
Yeah, 11 to 15. Curry, 11. Djokovic, 12. Coley, 13.
Who's Coley?
Virat Coley. He's an Indian cricket player.
Oh.
Sorry, I missed that one. That's on me, I guess, isn't it?
Well, it's
on me.
He
made 17 million in endorsements. He's got 34 million Facebook followers.
That's pretty good.
He ranked 8th last year, so he's falling off a little bit. Poor thing.
Which just shows you there are sports like that that are huge in other parts of the world.
Like, I'm assuming this might be cricket, too. Mahendra Singh Dhoni is 15. Rousey, 16. That's amazing.
I'm surprised she's still that high.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
After getting beat and kind of falling off the map.
Well, she did the Sports Illustrated, the body issue and some stuff like that.
I mean, she's higher than Conor McGregor, who's 25. Female.
Attractive. And she is an attractive woman.
Kaka at 18, is that soccer?
I think that is soccer.
Okay.
Kaka.
Soccer. Okay. I have no idea. Oh, and I missed this. Serena Williams, very much on the list, 19 for Serena Williams.
Yeah, when you told me she wasn't on, I was like, really? Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was on me.
Yeah, Kaka is a Brazilian soccer player. Actually plays for Orlando.
Oh, really?
City, yeah.
Wonder if Japan gets into tennis a little more than I give them credit for. Nishikori is in the top 20, a Japanese tennis player. I would not have expected that.
No. I wouldn't have either. Still shocked there's no baseball on there.
ESPN did such a bad job with this, the way it is. You have to like click back and then back, and it's a very convoluted deal. Just saying. But
curious how many NFL quarterbacks are on there.
Okay, hold on.
That's not fair to do to you.
Well, I mean, I can skim the list.
You mentioned Brady was on there. It's the most recognizable NFL player, which is obvious.
All right, NFL players. Still amazed Tiger at 10.
He's just such a huge name. It's such a sad story.
Sounds like he told the truth.
I think he told the truth.
He blew a zero on the breathalyzer. They haven't gotten the urinalysis back yet, but it appears that he was on Ambien and tons of pain medication and just passed out.
It just tells you when professional athletes have back injuries, it's brutal.
Oh, you know, it hurts just to.
Oh, I mean,
and spinal fusion. That doesn't sound fun.
No, and he's probably trying way too hard to get back.
All right, football players or anybody interesting. Tom Brady at 21, I see here. Dwayne Wade, 24. Maria Sharapova, 23. James Harden, 28. Tennis, Andy Murray, 32. Wayne Rooney, 31. Derrick Rose, 33. Kyrie Irving, 34. Maybe a little higher on Kyrie than I would have expected.
No, he plays on a really recognizable team, and he's a very good player.
Westbrook at 35, as I mentioned. Carmelo Anthony, 41.
Yeah, plays in New York.
Dustin Johnson, 43, number one golfer in the world. Cam Newton, 47. Simone Biles, U.S. gymnast, 48. Just kind of looking. Drew Brees, 52.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, 51. Russell Wilson, 55, one spot ahead of Aaron Rodgers.
Interesting.
Wilson, 55. Rodgers, 56. Sergio Garcia, 58. One Elijah Manning, 60.
Eli, 60.
60.
How about that?
Eli, 60. Damian Lillard, 61. Blake Griffin, 63. Dwight Howard, 65. Ricky Fowler, 62. Beckham, 64. Ryan Lochte, 67.
Yeah.
Still hanging in there.
Yeah.
Dale Earnhardt Jr., 69. J.J. Watt, 74. Jason Day, 85. Jimmy Johnson, 86. Caroline Wozniacki, 87. Rory got her beat there in that one. Just saying. Ali Raisman, 99. Adam Scott, 98. Bubba Watson, 94.
Is Ali Raisman the one that just did Dancing with the Stars?
Again, out of my lane. That's not one that I'm forced to watch, so I know nothing about Dancing with the Stars.
It actually was
I know David
good.
Ross was on
David
it.
Ross was in it. Rashad Jennings won.
Not surprising.
The NFL running back. Yeah, go figure.
NFL players do well in that.
NFL running back has good feet.
Not really fair for the actor, is it?
News at 10.
But really, all the former athletes do really well in that competition.
Yeah, the one that should have probably won because she was the best was the gymnast.
Again, shocker.
Yeah, shocker, yeah. She was amazing. Like, you would have guessed she was the pro.
And she didn't win.
No, because...
it's a popularity contest.
Well, Cubs Nation probably voted a lot, and then there's NFL, a lot of NFL fans voting.
It's crap.
Of course.
But it is a game show.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's affecting the world peace or anything.
The GDP is not being moved one way or the other over this.
What do you think the reaction would have been if someone had done to Obama, if you will, in quotes, what Kathy Griffin did to Trump with the
50 times worse.
At least, right?
Yeah. It's ridiculous anyway, but
it absolutely.
Yeah, 50 times worse.
What was she thinking? Thought it was funny?
Yeah, no one has any repercussions anymore. Everybody just goes crazy, does what they want. We have a complete lack of reverence and dignity in those areas.
That's the most disturbing thing about what's happened with the Trump presidency so far, and the way, and this is not a criticism of him any more than it is the media, or any less than it is the media, but I think he has done a lot of things to take some of the respect away from the office, and then I think a lot of the media covering him have done the same. And we need to, in my opinion, as Americans, hold that office in some degree of reverence.
Yeah, that's
fair. I don't know. She apologized. She had no choice to apologize, but God, it was such a dumb idea.
French Open's going on. Who knew?
Is it really? Yeah. Just got started?
When I was scrolling through ESPN, I see this morning that Venus won 6-3, 6-1. And that Bethany Maddox-Sands, it's a U.S. kind of double specialist, she beat Kvitova, the 15 seed, in 7-6, 7-6 this morning. So,
who's the favorite on the men's side?
I mean, Nadal's the 4 seed. If he's breathing on clay, somebody's got to beat him for me to not like him.
But he's taking a step back, hasn't
he? But yeah, it's on clay.
Yeah.
We'll see. But I don't know. Just saw that.
The podcast brought to you by Oxford University Bank, OUB, locally owned and operated right here in Oxford. When you deposit money at OUB, that money and the vast majority of the bank's profits go right back into the Oxford community. OUB currently offering a vehicle loan special, rates as low as 2.5%. OUB offers a full-service mobile app, lets you check your balances, transfer money, or deposit checks using your phone. OUB can literally service customers living anywhere in the U.S. In addition to all the best rates and gadgets, what makes OUB special is personal service. OUB has the absolute best people dealing with customer service. You'll always see a friendly face, always talk to an extremely knowledgeable person when you bank with OUB. To learn more about OUB, check out liveoxfordbankoxford.com or call 662-234-6668. OUB is FDIC insured. Podcast also brought to you by Michael Oswalt. If you are looking to buy or sell land anywhere in Mississippi, give Michael a call. He is a realtor, specializes in recreational and timberland tracts across the state of Mississippi. He works with Tom Smith Land and Homes. It's by far the largest broker of land in Mississippi. Go to his website, gotland.com. The land market is very hot right now. If you're on the fence about selling your land, your hunting club share, or your home with acreage, now is the time. Give Michael a call today. He's ready to meet with you and explain the process. If he can't earn your business in that meeting, he says he doesn't deserve it. Here are three ways to get in touch with Michael. Give him a call, 662-719-3967. Visit his Facebook page or send him an email. It's michael@tomsmithland.com.
SEC discussing a two bye weeks in every season. That would require moving the season up, however, but sure.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, 2 weeks is good.
I think it's a really good idea.
You don't need to play those 8-game stretches.
No.
Too beat up for that.
You put any stock in this rumor about the South Alabama game getting moved to a Friday night?
Wouldn't stun me. We'll see.
Randy Patrick, who is in Mobile, he's been there forever at one of the, I think, the CBS affiliate. Really connected with USA, says that's being talked about pretty
heavily. It would
require
the TV people to completely overrule Ole Miss because Ole Miss hates weekday games.
Yeah, I would not think Ole Miss would be excited about a Friday night game.
You're competing against high school football, and you get no tailgating for the day.
None.
Yeah. You lose a lot of tourism.
Yeah.
That you would get on Saturdays and Sundays and different things. No, it's Ole Miss has not played a weekday game at home since Arkansas in 97.
Yeah, when Tuberville was the coach.
Yeah.
I remember that game being on TV.
Deuce ran a kickoff back. Maybe the opening kickoff.
Yeah.
I think.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think I'm right. But
anyway. I mean, I'll simply say this. Randy Patrick is pretty dialed into USA, so there's probably something to it.
Yeah.
I don't know how far along it is. But anyway, I'll ask around today if I can.
I DVR'd the documentary on Johnny Newman. I haven't watched it yet. If I get to it tonight, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But I saw pretty decent reviews. Definitely an interesting human profile there. So
yeah, I didn't get to see it. We had our team pizza party.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I came back and interviewed Dash.
Final record?
We have our last game tomorrow night.
Okay.
We play the Cardinals.
Okay.
They're a little better than us.
Okay.
Suspect we will finish. What are we now? I suspect we will finish 4-5-1.
You just play 10 games?
That's it.
Really?
That's it.
Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not really fair to the kids. They should play more games.
Yeah, that's not enough.
No.
16, 18 sounds like a good number.
That's better. We had weeks.
We don't play 40, but.
We had weeks where we only played one game. I thought every week we should play two.
Yeah. Like just a set schedule, Monday, Thursday, and you play at 5:45 or 7. And
yeah, that's what I think, too. I think they missed an opportunity to play a few more games.
Okay. So the Cards have one more arm than you?
They have like three more arms than us.
Okay. Brian Cashman put that group together.
Yeah. It was funny last night because we were telling parents stories about stuff that's happened. The best one is when we have our sign to steal. We only have one sign to steal. It's just touch the hat and then down the front of the shirt.
So you have an indicator.
An indicator.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to get them, you know, they get older, they will have indicators. And I can't tell you how many times I've been looking over at one of them and I'll say the name and he'll look at me. I'm like, look at me. Look at me. And he looks over and I'm like, hey. One out, and then I give him the sign. He still doesn't run. And so we're laughing about how he's scared to steal the base.
As I've always said, I had the kid practice the suicide squeeze in the on-deck circle. So yeah. it is what it is.
Kind of a giveaway at that point.
Yeah. All right. Thanks to Dash for joining us again. More podcasts as the week moves on. Should be a good one tomorrow. So check it out. We will talk to you then.